Welcome everyone to Built to Lead, the podcast of Health Leaders of Tomorrow, Season 4 launch. We're so excited to host you live. For those of you starting your listening journey with us, welcome. For those returning from Seasons 1, 2, and 3, welcome back. Today we're going to quickly bring you up to speed if you're new to listening in to the Built to Lead and give you a sneak peek into our season's content. We also are thrilled to have Ian Underwood, the CEO of Habitat for Humanity, GTA, with us. My name is Hannah Hodgins, and I'm a proud alum of the Masters of Health Administration, IHPME, and Certified Health Executive. I'm co-hosting this launch with the founder of Built to Lead, Matthew Goldborn. Matthew, can you introduce yourself to everyone?
Thank you, Hannah. I'm Matthew Goldborn, class of 2020. Master of Health Administration, IHPME graduate, and Certified Health Executive. Before I go on to, I just want to give a special shout out to some of the attendees. We have Leo, some of our team members, Daraj, Luma, as well as Tony. He was a previous member, strong member as well as a team. So thank you everyone of our team and everyone else joining as well. And Built to Lead is really about building the next generation of leaders in the Canadian healthcare. But leadership is such a universal topic. So while we're going to focus a lot of our conversations through the landscape of the Canadian healthcare system, and the topics we're discussing are relevant to really any leadership situation. Built to Lead is a companion offering of Renaissance Health. So this is an affiliate dialogue series with the Institute of Health Policy Management and Evaluation and the Rotman School of Management. Renaissance Health supports the development of emerging and early career leaders in health. Built to Lead is led by a dedicated team of IHPME and Rotman students and alumni. Again, we would like to give a special welcome to Audrey Laporte, a professor of health economics and the director of the Institute of Health Policy Management and Evaluation, the Dalhousie School of Public Health, University of Toronto, to say a few words, Audrey.
Thank you so much. It's a real privilege to be here. And thank you to the Build to Lead team for inviting me. It's an honor to be able to say a few words of welcome on behalf of IHPME. I'd also like to thank and recognize the Built to Lead team for their hard work and dedication in sustaining this valuable series, because the skills and expertise that the series imparts are more important than ever. And in fact, these podcasts are used in a number of our programs and courses as part of the training process. So I would encourage all students, faculty, and alumni to listen to the exciting set of podcasts that are planned for season 4, and also to take advantage of podcasts from prior seasons, and to feel free to share them amongst your networks. So again, I'd like to congratulate the whole team that have put this series together. And with you all, I look forward to all that season 4 has to offer. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Audrey. If you've listened to past seasons of the show, you might remember that each season we pick a theme to look at healthcare leadership from different perspectives. The first season, we focused on growing from self-doubt to self-confidence. And the second season, we talked about the 5 mindsets of a leader. In our third season, we discussed getting back to joy as we emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic. When our team started to discuss what we wanted the season to be for season 4, we found ourselves ideating on a theme that resembled the need to sustain that momentum of radical change that emerged from the COVID-19 response. In a landscape where status quo is often the easiest path, we sought inspiration from those who defy the norm, challenge conversations in a pursuit of greater purpose, and chose rebel with a cause.
This season is a journey of unraveling the narrative of rebels who, in their own distinctive ways, are driving change, challenging the system, and making an impact. A rebel with a cause is not just a theme for us. It's an exploration, a celebration, and an invitation to lead the health system and to really change it, to make a difference. How can we be bold? How can we be audacious? How can we be a force that propels positive change? Listen to our intro episode this season to learn more. And now that we're all speed up on Built to Lead in our season, we really want to dive into our enriching conversation with Ian. For over a decade, Ian Underwood has been the CEO of Habitat for Humanity, GTA. There, she leads a team that defies the odds by helping working families build strength and stability and self-reliance through affordable home ownership in what is characterized as one of the most challenging residential real estate markets in North America. Ian was a member of Ontario's Housing Affordability Task Force, which filed its report with the Ontario government in February 2022, setting an ambitious goal of 1.5 million new homes over the next decade. Ian's career began in the private sector as a strategy consultant with McKinsey and Company, followed by close to two decades of leadership in Ontario's publicly funded hospital sector. Before devoting her career to addressing the housing challenges facing the GTA and Canada.
Ian, welcome to Built to Lead, and thank you for joining us.
It's fantastic to be here. I loved being part of the healthcare community, and it's nice being back in this way.
We're going to dive right in with some curious questions. As a health leader, what challenges did you face at different stages of your career? Did you have a pivotal moment or decision?
Yeah, so I, you know, for me, one of the first challenge I faced relative to a healthcare career was having one. I did not come from a clinical background. I hadn't been exposed to healthcare kind of growing up with my own networks, and I didn't choose to do a clinical undergrad. And my epiphany, born out of a number of kind of reasons that I wanted to be in healthcare, came 1 year into my post-undergrad career. And at that point in time, it was a very different age. We're now talking the late 80s. And so I thought, okay, I want to get into healthcare. I didn't do a clinical undergrad. I seem to have some leadership aptitudes. Maybe I should just get an MBA and then someone will want me in healthcare to come and lead something. So off I went to get an MBA, only to discover in that era, nobody wanted someone without healthcare background. And so that's how I ended up making the first step of my path to healthcare, going through the business sector. Ended up at McKinsey and Company, which is a global consulting firm, but kept volunteering and looking for ways to build networks in healthcare. Eventually, that created a bridge into healthcare through the hospital restructuring project that was being led by the then District Health Council. The decision to make that move for me was a pivotal one. It opened the door into healthcare, but it was a big deal. Almost everyone I worked with, where I was before, counseled me not to. It entailed a 60% reduction in compensation. And I was also going from a very well-known, kind of recognized, kind of brand name organization to an organization who, candidly, most people hadn't heard of, and those who had didn't view it as having all that much credibility or weight. But I really thought, I think this can form my bridge in. And in fact, it did. There's a bit about the rest is history. Kind of 2 years later, when that project was over, I now had built a general understanding at about a millimeter thick of many aspects of healthcare and had built a pretty broad network. And so then doors opened for me to be able to come into healthcare and make my next move, which ended up being going to what became University Health Network. Hannah, there's a lot of other pivotal decisions that I think of along the way, but I think in the interest of time, I'll just stop there. That was one of them. But I think, like all of our listeners, there are definitely a lot of moments where we make decisions that just end up taking us in one of many directions that are available to us.
Yeah, but I definitely resonate with that story. Even myself coming into healthcare, not coming from a clinical background, even having those same struggles, say, how do I get in? How do I find that door opportunity? And I really like how you talked about the power of volunteering, because I think this is something that you mentioned before in a couple other interviews as well, that like helped you create those networks, helped you be understand what opportunities are out there.
Absolutely. There's only two jobs in my entire career that have come through channels other than people that I've met and doors that opened because of my volunteering. So most of my career opportunities, including the one I'm in now, happened because of someone I had met through a network from volunteering.
So even for our listeners, just be cognizant of that, the power of volunteering. Sometimes, even in today's economy, we always want, obviously, job is important, but sometimes looking for those volunteer opportunities as well on top of when we're working, I think is important to build those networks. And you really talked about some of those pivotal change mean, and one of those big career transition was to Habitat, which is maybe mid-career, we could say. Can you talk about this transition and how did you make this transition? Because this must have been an important decision for you.
Yeah, indeed it was. And maybe just going back to the healthcare, I had had exposure in my consulting career to retail. Habitat has a degree of retail in the hospitals I was involved in. We'd been involved with redevelopment. Habitat is all about land planning and redevelopment. And I had lots of exposure to fundraising through my healthcare career and my volunteer life. So there were all these different pieces that made sense. So that's a little bit about how the opportunity came up and what made me decide this is a moment to change courses from healthcare into my second and final career, which is in housing.
And I love what you said there too. It really resonates with me again. And even just thinking back to some of our past guests, they really talked about how do you lead with your values. And even when you're looking for different opportunities, understand your values to go forward. So you talked about here and even before in the past, social good is one of your values that you really take to heart. So even using that as your compass. So even for our listeners, understand your values, have that self-awareness and use your values as a compass to understand, okay, do I need to move on? Because some of us are going to stay in healthcare in these spaces because it still aligns with us. But obviously for you, it did change. And that's not bad. That's not bad. It is you're following what your values are, so which is amazing.
I love that, Matthew. And I think, Ian, you shared, you know, pivoting from operation or strategic to operations. And I've had the opposite experience recently where I was more operations and now more strategic. And it really is this huge mindset shift that you need as a person. So if you can, as Matthew said, be aligned to your compass and your values, and you're working with like-minded people who have those similar values, then it will propel you forward and you'll be able to shift your mindset the way you need to be successful in whatever role it is or cause it is that you're trying to make an impact on.
I think so. And I think attached to that, Hannah, is also that notion, there's a degree of patience required even to be a rebel. Right. So it was clear in my mind that I wanted to be in operations and, you know, but the bridge I could find in the healthcare wouldn't give me that. But it was something I could build on. And when I finished that role and was able to get to University Health Network, then I thought, okay, give me operations. But the people that University Health, they don't totally know me. So there was, and that wasn't what they needed. Right then, they needed me to come in and use the skills that I had. And so there was a version of this that was me being patient and saying, here's what you as an organization need right now, which fits with what I can offer. Let me demonstrate my capabilities and to some extent earn that opportunity to then ask for, now can you help me open a door into this area where I really think I can be helpful?
So You brought up rebel, and that's what our season's all around, is a rebel with a cause. So we wanted to ask you, how would you define a good rebel?
You know, it's so interesting because when you approached me about this podcast and said that the theme was rebel, I just thought, well, that's not me. And it's been really useful thinking about this because I think the what first comes to my mind anyway when I hear the word rebel is the notion of, well, that means someone who's kind of oppositional and rebellious and defiant and is comfortable challenging authority and the status quo. A rebel is, it comes out of an intention and the notion of having something that you believe, something that is passionate, that you're passionate about, something that drives you. But Matthew, as you picked up on, then being a rebel has to be informed by values, both values in the how of being a rebel, which for me include integrity, honesty, fairness, etc., but also kind of values of kind of the world that you want to exist. So for me as a rebel, I guess in housing, you know, I have a value, which is a reflective of how I was born. I didn't grow up with means, and yet I had an opportunity to, you know, do well and flourish. That's the world I want for everybody. That's a value that informs kind of my behavior as a rebel. But that, I think, then leads to the other piece is this can't just come from the heart. Being an effective rebel also has to be really informed by do your homework, you know, that know what you are talking about, have a base from it. It can't just be pure ideology and flag waving. So for me, those would be, you know, some of the nuances around rebel. And maybe the other one I would add is, I think even though I hear the word rebel and I do think of it as a negative word because it feels tied to contrarian, et cetera, I think the most effective rebels are actually very positive, optimistic people. I think being an effective rebel comes from positivity. It is harder to get change done and have people want to follow you when your narrative is exclusively a negative one.
And you mentioned rebel comes with intention. You mentioned about integrity, value. Just talk about it can't be the heart only. So how do we have the heart and mind be in sync? In terms of characteristics of a good rebel, maybe which one of these, or maybe there's other ones that you're thinking of, would you prioritize and really exemplify as a good rebel? Like, how would you classify it, categorize it?
I think, Matthew, all three of them really matter. The three or four, the passion part matters. It's harder to be effective if it's not, if it's all intellectual. And then, as I said, it has to be informed by values, and then it has to be informed by a lot of do your homework. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I have one I can pull out. I think those three of them with a dose of positivity get mixed in.
That still works.
Maybe the other thing I would add, though, again, as I've reflected on this preparing for the podcast, is I've realized that, you know, parts of this thing are learned. And as I said, by definition, being a rebel does mean you're having to challenge what exists today, challenge the status quo. And that notion of challenge and kind of conflict and dissent comes more naturally to some people than others. It did not come naturally to me. So I grew up in a family where you did not raise your voice. You did not disagree, especially with authority. And so as I've gone through my career, you know, building kind of my capability and how to make those choices of when the right thing to do is to take a stand or try to lead people in a different direction than the river is flowing. Some of that is learned.
That's a great point, Ian. I think it's like a muscle. I have that bachelor of science kinesiology background. So I'm like, it's like a muscle. You gotta practice, you gotta strengthen it. You gotta refuel it. So with that being said, now that you're in the position you're in and you have that practice muscle of challenging the status quo, you know, can you tell us about the importance of challenging status quo in your current role?
Yeah. So, and I think I'll open here with what I know everyone's generally familiar with now, especially given what I'm guessing is the kind of age profile who may be on the phone today. This region, this province, this country is in the midst of the greatest housing crisis of our time, of this country's history. And that is imperiling us in so many ways. You see it all the time in healthcare. You see the impact in your ERs. You see the impact on mental health. You see the impact on recruiting and retaining the talent you need. The Toronto Region Board of Trade released a study 3 years ago that said the impact of the housing unaffordability in this region is costing us $6 to $8 billion a year in this region. So it also affects our competitiveness, our productivity, and therefore it definitely includes what kind of future are we creating and leaving for next generation. So it's a crisis that's been many years in the making, many decades in the making, and a crisis that, and I think people appreciate that, that has inadvertently advantaged people of my generation and older. So now the question of, well, where does that leave me? A challenge for us at Habitat for Humanity is because of the nature of our model, we're only able to deliver so many homes in any given year. So the first way, having said that, that we are paddling upstream is, as Matthew said in my introduction, we're defying the odds. We help households that are making total income, their total income of the entire household is between $75,000 and maybe $110,000 a year, which used to sound like a lot of money, but now isn't enough to even afford a two-bedroom unit or a three-bedroom unit for a family. So we're on the ground every day defying the odds and helping families on the ground. But what we're fortunate with this brand Habitat for Humanity, because we are a well-known and well-regarded and trusted brand, it gives us a voice, an ability to raise our voice on the bigger issues. So for me, as Matthew said in the introduction, I was asked to be part of the Ontario Affordable Housing Task Force. That wasn't actually about affordable housing. It was about housing affordability, but it was an opportunity to really lean in to identify what are the changes that we need that would make a difference of housing for everyone. It's a report, so it doesn't mean everything gets done or everything is agreed to. So there's work that I've continued to do of using my platform to be able to talk on multiple stages about the housing crisis and push leaders in different ways. Because Habitat is a trusted brand and a nonprofit brand, there are some things that I can say that are much more difficult for for-profit developers to say about some of the issues in our communities. So that's, I would say also as a rebel, part of the trick of rebel is understand your power and how to use it. So in our case, part of my power comes with having a CEO title. It's not about me, it's the title, but it just provides some weight. And then also I have this brand that people trust. And as I said, I can say things that some others cannot say. I've often said on platforms, again, because of the nature of the crisis, because it biases towards people who already have housing power, if you want to say it that way, and certainly towards my generation, because I am older, I can say things and challenge my generation about what we feel like we were all entitled to and we worked hard for, but to challenge people to say, right, you did work hard for that, but why shouldn't someone who's 25 years old today be able to aspire for the same opportunities that we had? So being able to kind of challenge in that way. I've tried to be very proactive now using social media. How can I use social media to raise a voice? What are those moments to get in and challenge on the social media front? We held a speaker series last year where we partnered with a couple other nonprofits and did a speaker series on what's at stake with housing in the GTA. And we brought, including people from the healthcare sector, we had Sasha Bhatia, who many people on the phone will know from Ontario Health, to come and provide a healthcare perspective. We had Agenda Silva, who at the time was CEO of Toronto Region Board of Trade, providing that perspective. So the notion of convening people to bring different voices to different audiences around this very significant societal issue. So there's some of the things I offer on why I'm passionate about this and some of the things that I'm personally trying to do to advance the cause.
We can all agree that we're definitely in a time of crisis. So we just thank you for the work that you're doing, the work your organization is doing, even the advocacy work, which is very important. And even in a time of crisis, I think the power of community is important. And how do we work even cross-sector? Even having, let's say, Bhatia coming in on somebody from Ontario Health to speak on how does health and home relate. So I hope that's something that we continue to do more in the future as healthcare individuals and people even outside healthcare coming together, challenging the status quo. And even just thinking about challenging status quo, do you have any maybe advice for emerging leaders on how they can challenge the status quo in healthcare specifically? And when they're trying to make a positive impact?
Yeah, so I have a few, and some of them I guess I've already mentioned. So one of them, strangely enough, is be patient, move quickly, slowly. The second, as I've talked about, is that, and I'll bring you some more, but I'm going to come back to a couple I've mentioned. So that notion of just really think about and understand what are your sources of power. I've named a couple of mine. One is being older and therefore being able to challenge my demographic in a different way. I am also white, which means there are times when being white I can use as an ally for other communities. There are times when being white means that is not my moment to speak about some issues. And then I've talked about, you know, the title and the organization I work for creates a source of power. So it's that notion of thinking through, okay, what are my sources of power at any given time? The next, I'd say, picking up on, you know, when I referred to the speaker series, there's the notion of rebels succeed through creating coalitions. I think I'd also say, you know, when I look back on my career, there's definitely a pick your battles. And so, I'm going to share a moment that was an example of where I got it wrong. So when I was at University Health Network, 5 years of my time there, I had the privilege of running this public-private joint venture that I've mentioned. It was called Toronto Medical Laboratories. And so we were an organization within an organization. For the first kind of few years that I was running it, we were kind of profiled in the annual report every year. And then a year came when we weren't profiled in the annual report of University Health Network. And though, for anyone listening who's in clinical laboratories, you'll relate, you will understand, you know, a challenge in clinical laboratories is that everybody misunderstands us and underestimates the importance of clinical labs. And so I loved being in clinical labs and I loved being an advocate for clinical labs. And so, and after this annual report came out where we weren't mentioned, a couple of my colleagues expressed their disappointment that they were not mentioned. And I was mad. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to write a letter to the CEO on behalf of, you know, my team, the people I'm advocating for, letting him know, you know, how disappointed and how wrong we thought it was that clinical labs weren't in UHN's, whatever the year was, 2002. And it was a letter I agonized over. We've all done this, right? Whether it's an email or whatever, something we think is really important. We read it multiple times. We think, okay, do I hit send? Do I not hit send? I hit send. And it really irritated the then CEO of University Health Network, who'd gone through a whole lot of work together with his comms people to put together what was a great report, and who had what I now recognize, you know, quite logical reasons for not profiling clinical labs. So, and that cost me. So I had previously had a really good relationship with that CEO. I still did, but it reduced my credibility. By making that choice. So that's was I a rebel? Yes. Was I an effective rebel? No. If I could do it again, what would I do differently? I probably would have asked a few more of my kind of trusted advisors, gee, we're upset about this. What should I do? The better thing would have been reaching out to the CEO and say, gee, can you make time to talk to me? I have a few people from my team that are, you know, we're hurt and disappointed that we weren't profiled this year. I'm trying to figure out how I should respond and support them. Can we meet? That was the better. But 20 years later, it hurts to remember it. That's a good thing, right? Because it means it informs the way I make decisions today. And maybe that also intersects with, hey, rebels, we all have to, we're going to make mistakes, and it's just embrace them, own them, and learn from them. And maybe, you know, Matthew, so the credibility of picking your battles. And the last one, I think it's probably same themes that you had in last year. I think your series was about joy. And so I'd come back to the characteristics where I'd say, you know, the most effective rebels are happy, optimistic rebels. And that means, I think, to be an effective rebel, there's a part of this that's about taking care of you, right? And it's so obvious, but sleep well, eat well, figure out what you're passionate about that's outside of work, make time for it. Like, those are the things that fuel and enable us to have the strength, the power, the foresight, the clarity of thinking to be an effective change maker, or if you like the word, rebel.
I love that, Ian. I'm going to jump in here, Matthew, because those last two statements, I experienced those together where I wasn't taking care of myself. And I made a rash decision where I pushed that send button on the email too. And that just so much resonated with me, because when I reflected afterwards and had the follow-up conversation with the individuals of that, you know, email, I was like, that was my bad. That's my mistake. Please learn from this and don't do this and take care of yourself. Because I was reflecting, like, I hadn't been eating well that day. I wasn't sleeping well that week. Like, but if I had taken care of myself, I probably wouldn't have pressed that send button on that email. So thank you for sharing.
Yes, and to our listeners, anyone that has certain emails in their drafts, I think that's just a call to action to delete those emails now. Save yourself some trouble. Be patient. And even just looking at people on the call, people are listening. We have more than three, like Ian was talking about. So each of us in our network can start that revolution. So again, find your value, be patient, understand your source of power, which is important. And Ian, before we close up, we really want to go to a special section where we call rapid fire. So you may not be prepared for this, but we have some more fun questions for you. So hopefully you answer them in about 10 seconds or less. And the first question I'm going to give you is, what is one book or movie, TV show, or even podcast episode that comes to mind when you think of Rebel and Disruptor?
The 100 Years of Lenny and Margo. That's okay. A book. You can listen to it online. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful story that portrays a fairly rebellious, outside of the box young teenager and someone who is older, and a story that brings them together. So that one comes to mind.
Next rapid fire. Who is the great disruptor or rebel in your life?
My son. My son, I can't claim any of the genetic credit for. My son is adopted. He became my son at the age of 9. We were his sixth home in a period of 3 years. And so I think for people listening to that, you can appreciate his life has had a lot of instability in it. He also is wired as a risk taker. I'm not wired as a risk taker. So I have learned and been enriched a great deal by his life. He also uses the school of hard knocks approach to, you know, to adolescence and to young adulthood. I was a goody two shoes, right? I didn't color outside of the lines. It's been incredibly enriching to learn from him.
And even just talking about how you will continue being a rebel. So in 10 years, how would you continue being a rebel, and where and how do you envision yourself?
So first of all, I hope I get the privilege of being alive 10 years from now. I am 60 years old and just am incredibly grateful for having had six full decades of life. So if I get the opportunity to live another 10, to live another decade, I hope I'm raising my voice and it'll be just be in different ways. It will still relate to housing. And again, I hope that I am again using the power that comes with being in that demographic, while I hope having the humility and curiosity to recognize that the arguably greatest thinking is coming from people in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. So I hope kind of, and it's what I am trying to do today, is be able to now kind of more channel into, be more of an enabler of the next generation of leaders in driving change. Than being the change leader. And I think that should be our natural, whatever evolution as humankind, of what it means to be in your late 50s, 60s, and then into your later years.
So really important question. I grew up as a farm girl, and I hear that you may have grew up rurally as well. And now you're living in the city. So are you a city life or country life?
I am both. Hannah, fantastic that you grew up on a farm. I did too. I'm very proud of my agricultural roots. Canada is now only 2% of Canadians are part of the population that feeds the rest of us. And so I've lived in the city all of my adult life, but I have the privilege of returning to a fourth generation, kind of very large farm in Southern Ontario, and that's run by my brothers and nephews. And that's an important part of who I am as well.
That's amazing. And this question is usually the hardest question. So be ready. Fill in the blanks. Rebels are
indispensable if we as a society are to move forward in a positive, inclusive way.
Wow. Great way to end. We thank you all for joining us on your lunch or wherever you're listening in from. If you have listened to our previous seasons, please do so and be prepared for an episode a week for the next 6 weeks. Thank you to our amazing podcast team. We have to give a shout out to Leo, Luma, Julian, Daraj, Tony, and Mobeen for your hard work along with the podcast teammates that from previous seasons. You're the reason this podcast continues to share valuable insights through your volunteer work. A special shout out to Dr. Eileen Davila, who is also listening in today.
And another statement of gratitude is required for Wendy Nelson. Wendy is a senior fellow at IHPME. Wendy is a creator of Vernissage Health, and we thank her for her guidance and leadership in Built to Lead. Thank you, everyone, for being with us today. Thank you for those that are listening. Thank you for joining us on Built to Lead Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Built to Lead is a companion podcast to the Vernissage Health Dialogue Series at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation at the University of Toronto. Tell us what you thought about our launch event episode. You can find us on LinkedIn at Vernissage Health and on Instagram at Vernissage Health. You'll find both of these in the episode description. You can access Built to Lead wherever you get your podcast from, including Acast, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, everyone.